Parsha Matos starts off by Yedaber Moshe, how Rosh Amatos of Bnei Yisrael Lemor. So Moshe spoke to the heads of the Shvatim, to Bnei Yisrael, saying, "Zeh Devor Shetziv Hashem." This is the thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded. So it doesn't say the way it normally would, and the way it would be would normally by Dabar Hashem or Moshe Lemor. Right, Daber or Rosh Amatos of Bnei Yisrael Lemor. That's what you would assume it would say. The normal thing is to say the word Hashem within here in some way, shape, or form, but it doesn't. It says Daber Moshe or Rosh Amatos. So why does it start off that way? So I haven't had extra time this week, and I was listening to a speech, but when I listen to speeches, I usually carry a sifter with me just in case, only because the speech wasn't meant for me and I didn't mean to be there. I was accidentally there. So that I happen to have the Ishbitzer on me, the Me'ah Shiloach. So I looked up the Me'ah Shiloach, and he happened to have this question. He said, why not start off by Yedaber Hashem Moshe like you would by any other parsha? Why do you start off by Yedaber Moshe or Rosh Amatos? It's happening. Don't worry, Brian. It's fine. Because other mitzvos, says the Ishbitzer, are shayich all the time. There's something available to be able to do that mitzvah. And a Kaddish Baruch Hu knows when he can apply, when it can't apply. It's really up to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. If he wanted to command it to us, then he knows that we have the ability to do it. And if he doesn't want to command us, then he knows we don't have the ability to do it. That's the reason why. But nedarim are more subjective. That means that everybody has to make up a nether on their own. They have to decide on their own whether they're going to make the nether or if they're not going to make the nether. What do you need? What do you have to work on? What is something that you yourself, in your position, where you are, that you have to do? Everything else is mitzvah Hashem. This isn't mitzvah Hashem. It's from us. It's from us ourselves. So only Moshe Rabbeinu told the Rosh Amatos to tell Bnei Yisrael that everybody in Bnei Yisrael will be able to make this decision. Because this is not a decision that's made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what Nidarim we will make. It's a decision that's made by me in my way, obviously with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help. But meaning I am making this deal because I think I need to work on something. What a crazy concept. In the first Mishnah, in Perek Beis and Perek Gimel, Perkei Avos, they start off the exact same way. Much ink has been spilled regarding this one little subject. It says, Histakol begimel dvarim, ve'ena tabali de'avera. Look at three things and you won't come to do an avera. Rebbe says, know what's above you, an ayin roa, and knows in shomath, and a yad that's writing everything in the sefer. The very first Mishnah in Perek Beis of Perkei Avos, know what's above you. That's what you're supposed to do, and if you do that, then you're not going to come to do an avera. Perek Gimel, exact same words. Akavya b'mahalal omer, histakol b'gimel dvarim, v'ena tabali de'avera. Look at three things, and you won't come to do an avera. What do? Damayin basa, where do you come from? La'ayin ataholeich, where are you going? Right? And with me ata osid litin din b'cheshben. Who are you going to give din b'cheshben to? But it's the exact same issue, just different suggestions of how you're supposed to look at a Kaddish Baruch Hu to stop yourself from doing an avera. But what happens when it's too late? You're already in the throes of the avera. You're already doing something that you know you can't do. So now what? So these are the three things that you have to get away from. You have to get yourself away from all this. But what if you're already there? What if my taiva is so misgather, it's strong, it's so strong for me, I can't do anything else. I've already started there. Now what do I do? Now what am I supposed to do? So then, the pasuk says, Ish ki dor neder. If a man wants to make a neder, even bizman achid, this is what a person can do. If you're in a situation you can't get out of, a woman that you can't get away from, or an avera that you have to do, then what do? You swear, at that moment, I swear I'm not going to do it. I swear, I promise myself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I won't do it. It's something that is an immediate reaction. An immediate reaction is something that I can't get over. By doing that, I'm going to be able to take care of myself. Even bizman achet. The parsha here, it is very, it's not something you can look up to. Again, we have the two Mishnahs to not allow yourself to come to the Avera in the first place. But if it's already too late and it's already there, the only choice that you have is to make a nether. This parsha here is to stop you from wherever you're going, where all of a sudden something comes up and you're shocked. I was planning on doing this, but all of a sudden I'm veering off the path and I'm going that way.
Then you have two things that you've done. If you do the Avera you have the netter, you rope, and the avera.
Then you can have both. This hopefully will stop you from doing the avera. That's the whole point of it. If you're not going to be able to stop yourself, then you're right. I mean, then you're going to lose the avera itself. It's not telling you to put yourself in a position where you swear falsely and then go ahead and do the avera. It's telling you do this in order to help yourself. But that's the reason why matos is put next to maase. Why we have matos right next to maase. Matos starts off with nidarim. Maase is all about the travels of an Israel. Says the Ishbitzer. The whole shot is, if you know who you are, you know what you're doing, you know where you're heading and where you're going, you don't need nidarim. Because you don't need to swear anything, you don't need to promise anything. You're good as you are. The only time that you do is if you have an emergency procedure when you're traveling, you don't know where you're going, when you messed up on your way out there, that's when you need the nidarim. The best eitzah is to be able to promise yourself or swear to yourself, I'm not going to do this. When maase happens, my taifas are going crazy, they're all over the place, then use nidarim as a mate, as a staff that knocks us down and knocks down my taifas, and I'm going to be able to take it. That's why the famous Gemara in Nazir Gabdalim Abayz with Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik said, all my life I never ate from the korban of a Nazir. A Nazir that messed up and became Tameh, I never ate from his korban except for once. There was a Nazir that I saw once that I did. What was the story? This man came in and he said to me, I want to shave my head off to Shemayim. And I said to him, my son, why would you want to shave your head off to Shemayim? You have got the most beautiful hair I've ever seen before in my life, if you don't mind me saying so. So he looked at Shimon HaTzadik. And he said to him, he just got it. So either way, he looked at Shimon HaTzadik and he said, you should know that I never looked in a mirror. And one time I was grazing with my sheep, I was helping my sheep graze on the fields, and I looked down into a river, and I saw my own reflection. And the line is, Pachaz Yisraelai. My Yitzhar Har went crazy on me. He said, wow, you are the best looking guy I've ever seen. I've never seen such a guy that's as good looking as you. My own Yitzhar Har said that about myself. Do you realize what you're going to be able to do? You could have any girl in the world, my Yitzhar Har said to me. And I said, Ha'avoda, I swear, Sha'agalchecho l'shamayim, that I am going to cut you down, that I'm going to shave you to Shemayim. Said Shimon HaTzadik, that's the korban that I want to eat from. You know why? Because that's exactly what a neder is for. That's the purpose of making being an Azir. Because if something happens to you at that moment, and there's nothing else you can do to get around it, it just happened. He happened to look at his reflection. He happened to have the Gezara. He didn't want it, but it happened right at that moment. And at that moment, that's when you swear. That's when you use the Nedarim. That's how you knock yourself down. That's why Shimon HaTzadik said, you are the perfect Nazir. You're the reason why there is such a thing as Nazirs. You're the reason why the purpose of the whole Nazirs was made. It was all because of you. That's the idea. It always gets to a person. Whenever you start learning Pirkei Avos, start learning Pirkei Avos a little bit. And you sit there. I'm sorry? It was the perfect idea. Only then should you make such an idea where you know your Yetzer Hara is going a little crazy. That's when you decide to become an Nazir. That's when you decide to make a Nazir, because it's the last choice before you sin.
You have the point of becoming a Nazir in the first place, because by becoming a Nazir, you're supposed to overcome.
Supposed to be holy and supposed to overcome it, exactly.
But you can't, and you have to shave his head because of it.
Ah, very good. No, you shave your head only at the 30 days when the 30 days is up.
He did it because of his Yetzer Hara, but that point of becoming a Nazir is to beat your Yetzer Hara.
And that's what he did was he gave himself just a little bit of extra Kedusha. At that moment, when he wanted to go sin, at that moment when he decided, you know what, I'm going off to downtown Chicago, I'm doing whatever I want to do. At that moment when he had decided that, he stopped himself and he said, I am a Nazir. And he couldn't go. That's what stopped him. So 30 days later, he wasn't looking in a mirror. He didn't look at himself in the river. He didn't have that Yitzhar anymore. The Yitzhar was already calmed down. It's been 30 days. But at that moment, he had to take advantage of it, and he had to make that Nazirus at that moment to be able to get out of it. This is what happens. You know, you see stuff like Nazirus, and you see stuff like Nedarim, and you look at Pirkei Avos, and you say to yourself, you know, it's too much. It's too much. All these little halakos and everything, why do I have to do more than what the Torah tells me that I can do? Torah prescribes a certain amount of mitzvos and averos that I have to stay away from, and that's that. A neder is just adding on problems. So why do I have to go ahead and do this? This whole parsha should be a time where a person looks at himself and says, why do I need this? This is the exact opposite of what I want. This doesn't make me happy. This gives me more Yisur. I need more Yisur, like I need a hole in the head. That's what I really need. I don't need any of this stuff. Says Rav Shor, a mushal, but I'm souping up the mushal a little bit, because I didn't really understand the mushal as he wrote it, so I'm souping it up a little bit more to apply to us. A father loves his son. It's his only son, and his wife passed away. He has no parents, no siblings, no anything else. The only thing he has in this world is this son. That's all he has. So he makes rules for the son, and he tells him, listen, I love you. I'm making these rules because I want you to be safe. I don't want to lose you. I don't want you to go do crazy stuff. So he begs him. He says, please, no bungee jumping. I don't want you to go skydiving. No going over 80 miles an hour in any car ever, no matter what the speed limit is. I don't want you doing any of that. No rickety roller coasters at all, please. And he gives those over to his son. No, yes, maybe. The son sees a drag race. He's off on his own, sees a drag race. And somebody like says to him, hey, if you want to join us, you can come join us. All you got to do is just get your car ready, rev it up a little bit, and you can come join. Technically, it's safe. Technically, he knows he'll probably be okay, but he knows what his father wants for him. And he knows that his father would tell him, not a good idea. So out of his love for his father, and out of his father's love for him, he decides, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go ahead and do it. Did his father say he can't do it? His father didn't say it. But it seems to be something extremely similar to what his father was talking about. And out of his love, not because he says that I'm so restricted, I can't do this, but out of his love and realizing this is what my father really wants from me, and I realize that he's right. I know deep down that he's right. I mean, I always admit to it, but I know he's right. You decide you're going to stop yourself. That's what a Gzeira Nasiyag should be. A Gzeira should be that I stop myself from doing something because I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not because, oh, it's just another thing that I'm not allowed to do. Look at another thing as if I'm already restricted, now you're doing even more so. No, a neder should only show your love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you can't show your love by making a neder, then it's usur for you to make nedarim, says Rav Shor. It's usur. You can't do it. Because the only way to make a neder is if you're doing it the right way to show your love, to represent everything else, not your representation of hatred, not your representation of everything that HaKadosh who stands for that you can't stand, it should represent only love. You should know, Nidorim were not rampant when the Beis HaMikdash was around. And there were no Gezeiras, no Durabanans. They were really all over the place. They had a couple, but the big Durabanans weren't made until after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. For the simple reason, when the Beis HaMikdash is around, you love God and your love for God is manifest by the fact that you just look at the Beis HaMikdash. You see this crazy stuff and you say, oh my gosh, there really is a God, because you're seeing a miracle daily, hourly, even every minute you were seeing a miracle. You're seeing that fire that goes up straight from the Mizbeach, straight up to Shemayim. The fact that there are no flies. All the crazy stuff that happens in the Beis HaMikdash. When the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, all of a sudden, you don't know. What happened? What am I supposed to do? How do I find my love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu if he's not constantly with me, if I don't have that constant connection? For that, you got to find your love. You got to realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you rules. For what? Because he loves you and he wants the best for you. So any nether that you make better follow in those footsteps. If it doesn't follow in those footsteps, you can't do that. When you're a little more rachok, you got to bring yourself closer to him. And that's the point of a nether and the reason why we have it in the first place. These nedarim have absolute power. Unbelievable amounts of power. It's connecting back and giving you more power within your dibur. And every year I say a story that has something to do with this. This year, no exception. How powerful a person's dibur is. Here's one of the examples. When Shimon Peres was going up against Menachem Begin years and years ago for the prime minister, for the election of prime minister in Eretz Yisrael. So Shimon Peres had made a statement that got thrown throughout all of Israel that said that if I'm elected as prime minister, I will make sure that every Haredi yeshiva boy will serve in the army. Every single one of them will serve in the army. So the stipler said to his son Rav Chaim Knievsky, he said, if that's so, then Shimon Peres will never be prime minister. That's his line. So Rav Chaim was telling it over to other people. And he said that it's well known, it's well documented, that Shimon Peres feels that there's a curse on him. Because Shimon Peres has never been elected prime minister, even though he became prime minister at some times when people were killed or when something happened, he ended up going into the position, but he was never elected prime minister, and he never had the power as a prime minister. He was never allowed to make decisions as prime minister. He was never given that. And even when Sharon went down, it was Ehud Olmert that went in, and not Shimon Peres, even though technically Shimon Peres had authority, but Ehud Olmert was the guy who was the, what was it? It was the, I forgot how it's called, assistant prime minister. I don't know what it's called. Not the vice president, but it's something like that. Deputy prime minister, I believe is what it's called in English. So he went in, and Reb Chaim says, it's true, he was cursed from the stipler's words. You don't go up against the stipler's words. When the stipler says something, it's going to happen. So he'll never be elected as prime minister. Number two, a woman came to the Beis HaMikdash. This just tells you how powerful, just how much tzaddikim try to hide the crazy things that they can do. A woman approached the Beis HaLevi, one of the Brisker Rubs. One of the Brisker Rubs. They went up to the Beis HaLevi, the son of the, and the father, I'm sorry, of Reb Chaim, and he asked to help her. She said, I'm an aguna. I don't know where my husband is. He ran away years ago. I have no idea what to do. Please, please help me. Where can I go? How can I find my husband? What am I supposed to do? Finally, she said to him, you know, he kept looking at her like, what can I do for you? I'm just a rabbi. You know, what am I going to do? Finally, she said, please, Rebbe, just tell me. Tell me if he's alive. He said, all right, yeah. She said, he's alive. Tell me, is he a meshumid? Is he a Christian? Did he go off the derech? Is he not from anymore? He said, no. She said, then is he going to come back? Is he coming back anytime soon? He said, yeah. Yeah. So she left. And a couple weeks later, the word came out, her husband came back. So they ran to the Beis HaLevi and said, you're a Valmofes. You did miracles. You predicted the future. He said, I didn't predict the future. I told her the truth. She asked me if he's alive. Well, in Lumdis, you have something that's called a Cheskes Chai or a Cheskes Meis. Do you assume that the person is alive or do you assume that the person is dead? We always assume the person is alive until you're otherwise. So I said, he's alive. Then, you have a question of a Cheskes Kashrus. Do we assume that the person is still kosher or that he sinned and that now he's puzzle? You always have the Cheskes Kashrus. So I said, he's kosher. And if he's alive and he's kosher, then why wouldn't he come back? So it must be he's going to come back. So he just assumed from all that he was going to come back. But Lamaisa, obviously, the Beis HaLevi wouldn't have said that if he wasn't already positive that the lady was coming back. You don't just stop and make up that. It's like somebody comes up to me and they're like, yep, you're fine, don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. He's coming back in 2 weeks. You're not going to say that. He knew it. But once a person has that power of words, here, this story took me apart. Two more stories. Rabbi Yitzchak Ezrachi is one of the Rosh Yeshivas of the Mir. He still gives shir in the Mir Yeshiva. Yitzchak Ezrachi is the son-in-law of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who was one of the famous Bali Musar, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva. So Yitzchak Ezrachi went to Rav Chaim when Rav Chaim was in the hospital once. And he saw how Rav Chaim was doing, and he saw that he wasn't doing so well. He wasn't doing so well. So we said to him, Rebbe, should I call up Rav Elie Lopian? Rav Elie Lopian, Mamish, you can't say enough stuff about Rav Elie Lopian. He was the Mashkiach in Kfar Hasidim. Beforehand, he was in Europe. He was, Mamish, the Mashkiach of all Mashkichim. There's no one like Rav Elie Lopian. He literally was able to stand at a bus stop, and when he turned his head a little bit to see if the bus was coming, he used to say to himself, in Kelm, I would have given myself 39 lashes for that. He never did one extraneous movement, a movement that wasn't necessary. Nothing. He was Mamish, the king of all Mashkichim. So they called up Rav Elie Lopian and Sifrach and Kfar Hasidim to tell him what was happening. And Rav Elie Lopian got the phone call, and it's Kiyadua. Everyone knows what happened after that. It's well documented that as soon as he got the phone call, he ran into the Beis Medrash in the middle of Seder, ran up to the Aron Kodesh, opened up the Aron Kodesh, and started screaming out to Tehillim. And he said it was for Rav Chaim. And then afterward, he did a Mishaberach for Rav Chaim. What's not known is what happened back at the hospital. Back at the hospital, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, 5 minutes after they had called up Rav Elie Lopian, 5 minutes later, Rav Chaim said, I'm feeling better, I think I can go home now. 5 minutes later, the doctor came in, did all his tests, said, he's fine, he can go home, he's perfectly fine. And he went right home. He got into his regular clothes. A half an hour after the phone call was put into Rav Elie Lopian, he went home. So later on, when Rav Elie Lopian passed away, so they asked Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, do you want to deliver the hesped? Do you want to give the hesped? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz said, I'm not worthy to do it. And then later on, he decided, you know what, I'll do it. He got up to give a hesped. And he got up, and this is the words that he said. Rav Elie, you saved me when I was sick. Please help Rav Huttner now. He's an Adam Gadol. I could be made for him. What's wrong with Rav Huttner? That was the day that the plane, the Jewish El Al plane, was hijacked at Ein Tevi. That was the day when Rav Elie Lopian had passed away, was the day when the plane was hijacked, the famous hijack where, who was it? It was Bibi Netanyahu's brother was killed trying to save, he was the only one killed when they did the raid and they were able to successfully be able to get every single one of the passengers out. One of the passengers on that plane was Rav Huttner.
Really?
From New York. Really? So one of the passengers on one of the passengers on the plane was Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner was on that plane. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz got up and he said, please, Rav Elie, help Rav Huttner. He's an Adam Gadol. I can promise you he's an Adam Gadol. I can be made for him. Within 1 hour of that hesped is when the raid happened and they all survived and everything happened and the captives were freed. At the end of the Shiva, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz spoke in the yeshiva and he started off his speech and he said, I publicly thank Rav Elia Lobian for saving those who were caught in Ein Tevye. It's such a crazy line. Because there were people who literally had the power of tefillah that whatever they davened for worked. Rav Elia Lobian was beyond this world. You want to hear crazy stories about him? Just go to Rav Matisyahu Solomon. Ask Rav Matisyahu Solomon anything. You want to hear stories? Go to Rabbi Cohn. Rabbi Cohn has heard stories beyond stories of Rav Elia Lobian, of what he's been able to do. A person like that, his words are so holy that they can't go against them. But there's nothing like this. I told over a story earlier today about Menachem Mendel of Vitebsk, a crazy story about Shadim and the crazy Mazikin told over by the Tzenach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he's also known as Mendel of Horodok, but he's Menachem Mendel of Vitebsk. So one time, two Bali Din came in to Menachem Mendel to be judged. They wanted the case to be judged in front of him. So Menachem Mendel heard their two claims, and he judged like one of the two litigants. So the other guy said, "I'm not listening to you. That's garbage. I'm not listening to you." You know, this is what Menachem Mendel told him. He said, "When I became Rebbe, I took a box and I put my kass, my anger, inside that box. Then I put that box and I put it on top of the Aron Kodesh." And he pointed to the Aron Kodesh where there was a box. There's a box up there. Pointed, "That's the box that has my anger in it. Normally, I don't get angry. But when I need my anger, l'shem shemayim, I take a stool, I reach up to the top of the Aron Kodesh, I pull out the box, take out the kass, and I use it. I'm warning you now, if I pull out my kass, there's no holding back. And I promise you, you will regret it." The guy gave in. The guy immediately gave in. It's just unbelievable. The power of words is so unbelievable. He didn't do anything. It was like Menachem Mendel pulled him up by the shirt and just like, "I'm going to kill you." Nothing like that. The power of words is so unbelievably powerful. The ability that a person has, that if he uses words correctly and does things correctly, there's nothing. There's absolutely nothing that can be done regarding all that stuff. But I tell you, I said it before, I'm going to say it again, there is absolutely nothing like the Chassam Sofer. Okay, you're going to have to keep up your heads for this. I wanted to bring in a blackboard, like a little blackboard, so you'll be able to write it all down, so you'll have it down, because this is a little complex of a vort. If you have a pen, you can write down a little bit of this, but it goes a little crazy. But when I saw this with you, Shui, this past Sunday night, I went into it a little bit more, looked up two other svarim, put it all together. This is a crazy, 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 crazy vort. That's four. That's four. When you get to five, it's beyond this world. Then you can't. Then people might die. But here, this is just crazy. Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yud Dalid. The Pasuk says the following. It says, "Vayikzof Moshe Kvi Achayil." He sends out people in his army, Pinchas, and 12,000 men to go fight. Mohammed's Midian, to go fight against Midian. They destroy, they massacre Midian, but they save the woman. The women are kept alive. Vayikzof Moshe al pekudei hachayil. Moshe got angry at those people who fought in the war. Sari alafim v'sari ha'meos, but only at the officers of thousands and officers of hundreds. Well, it's 12,000 people. There are 12 sari alafim and 120 sari ha'meos. Habayim mitzvah mochama. He didn't get mad at Pinchas. He didn't get mad at the Sari Chamishim or the Sari Asaros. Only these guys. You let the woman live. Hein, hein, all you live in Israel, but Bilam. Those were the women that were with Bnei Israel because of what Bilam said. Limsor Mal Bashem, to cause a sin against God, Al Tvar Pa'or. And that caused the Magefa. Go kill those women who were together with other men. Go kill all those women right now. And they went ahead and they killed them, and that settled everything. Okay, crazy stuff here. Why'd they have to be killed, number one? Number two, limsor ma'al b'Hashem? Isn't that a weird word for a chet? Ma'al? It's a weird word. Why is he using that word? Then, why only the Sari Alef and the Sari Meos? Why is he angry at Pinchas? Why is he angry at everybody else? So what's going on here? What's going on here? Okay, Sanhedrin, Sadi Testament Beis, says, Adam ki la'adam la'amo yulad. Ki Adam, La'amo Yulad, Eev, Parakeh, man is made to work hard. Says the Gemara, what kind of work? Is it work of your mouth? Or work as in physical labor? What kind of work are we made for? What were we created for? Says the Gemara, Ki Okaf Alav Piyu, because God turned his mouth, Hashem said something, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed his mouth to be that way, it must be that it's referring to an amelus of the peh. You have to work hard with your mouth. Okay. But I don't know what kind of work with your mouth you mean. Do you mean that you have to talk a lot? Or does that mean that you have to learn a lot of Torah? Says the Gemara. because it says the word Lo Yomush Sefer HaTorah Zeh Mipicha, the Torah cannot be removed from your mouth, must be La Amo Torah Yiv Nibra. We were all created in order to toil and work in Torah, to speak out words of Torah. Our whole creation is all about the Amelus in Torah, about working hard in Torah. Okay, here we go. The problem is, Bilam said, V'lo ra amo b'Yisrael. One of his curses, in the second curse that he gave to Bnei Yisrael, which was really, as we know, a bracha, was V'lo ra amo b'Yisrael. He didn't see Amelus in Yisrael. Well, that's a terrible thing. That's a curse. If you don't see Amelus, if you don't see the Amal Torah, then that seems to be something bad. But Rashi says that Amal is the Lashon Aveira. Since when is Amal a Lashon Aveira? Amal means working hard. So what does that mean? So Lora Amal B'Yisrael means there were no Aveiras in Klal Yisrael. But Amal doesn't mean that. Here's the pshat. There are two klipos, two sides of tumah, that get us to sin during our daily lives. Two extremely effective powers of tumah that can do things to us. One is called Amalek, and the other one is called Arud. Arud. Those are the two extremely heavy kochos atuma that we have. Amalek has no kedusha at all. He has all the tuma of the satan. All the tuma of the satan. The satan's name is Sam. Samach Mem. The poison of God. Which means that if Amalek takes his name, he's got the letters Amo, Ayin, Mem, Lamed, and Kuf. The Kuf is the gematria of Samach Mem, of the Sam. He's the Amo, he's the toil, the work of the Satan. Everything that Satan works to get becomes Amalek. Anytime he's mevatel your Torah, or he causes you to sin, that's called Amaal Ba'Hashem. The Sam is making the Amo, the Ayin Mem Lamed, into a Mem Ayin Lamed, into a Ma'al Ba'Hashem. It's the same letters. He's causing it to be a sin, and he's causing you to do something wrong. Who fought Amalek? Who was the first person to get up and fight Amalek? What was his name?
Yoshua.
Yoshua got up and fought Amalek. He's the one that it says, Lo Yomash HaTorah Zemi Picha. Don't allow the Torah to go through your life. He was there. He was in the tent all day long, Yoshua. Yoshua learned Torah all day long. He's a Melus B'Torah. His Amo B'Torah defeated the Amo of Amalek. Unless he was able to take out the Amo, it was left with just the Kuf. And in fact, by learning Torah, you add on an El to Sam's name. So it becomes Sam and then El. It becomes a powerful name of Kedusha, and he's able to add on the Amal to Klal Yisrael. Here's what the Gemara says. Gemara Kedusha in Laman Mabez says the following. Kol Oisik B'Torah Lishma. Anybody who learns Torah the right way, Nasalo Sam HaChayim. It becomes for him an elixir of life. A poison of life. Meaning, a good medicine for you. But if you use the word Sam, says such an unbelievable daflaw. The Sam becomes life for you. You can turn the Satan against himself and make him into more life for yourself if you learn Torah. This is how the Chasam Sofer says it. There's a Sefer HaMakneh in Kiddushin Laman of the Beis that says, El is Kiddusha. Sam is Tuma. But if you use Atbash, Aleph is the same as Tuf. Beis is Shin. Gimel is Resh. Dalid is Kuf. And you go all the way through, Samech and Mem are the letters of Ches and Yud. You can take the Sam and turn it into Chai, into life. That makes it Kulo Kadosh. Aleph, if you spell it out, Aleph Lamed Pei. Lamed, Lamed Mem Dalet for El. And then Chai, Ches is Ches Tov. Yud is Yud Vav Dalet. It's a gematria of 613. Because if a person goes ahead and learns that Torah and does the 613 mitzvos, he's able to turn the Sam into Chai, make it into El Chai, a living God that's around us at all time. And thus, Yaakov Avinu was able to be Yaakov Avinu Lo Meis. He never died. Why? Because he was the person who learned Torah. This is the Gemara in Tainus Dalet Mabez. He turned the Sam into Chai. He turned the Mace into being an Ish Tum. He turned around the letters of Mace into the word Tum. He became the Yoshev Olam. He fought the Sam, the Malach of Esav. He fought against the Malach of Esav when the Malach of Esav hit him in the hip and destroyed his hip. He turned him down, and therefore he called him Yashar El, Yisrael. He named him that name. Why? Because he was full of El. He was the one who was able to take that El and put it into the Sam and turn the Sam into Chai and make him live. And make him live a real life. So with Amelus B'Torah, you're saved from the Amal of the Chet. Said Bilam, Velo Ra Amal B'Yisrael. He didn't see any Amal of Ma'al, any sins in Yisrael. Because they have the Yashar El, they're able to make the El, they're able to take the Sam and turn it into Chai. So there's no Ma'al there, there's no Amalek. Okay, there's no Amalek. But Amalek isn't the worst tumor. The worst tumor is Arad. It's crazy. Amalek comes from the names of Balak and Bilam. Balak's Beis, Lamed, and Kuf. And Bilam's Ayin and Mem are the letters of Amalek. You're left with the letters Lamed, Beis, Beis. Levav. Inside Bilam and Balak was Amalek. The powers of Amalek. But if you take their actual names, Bilam and Balak, and you add them together, Bilam altogether is 142. Balak is 132. That's the gematria of 274, which is known as Arad. If you remember, we quoted Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa heard there was a snake that was destroying people, that was biting people and killing them. And Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa put his leg on top of the hole. And the snake came and tried biting him, and immediately the snake died. We quoted that 2 weeks ago, that the snake died after it bit Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. That snake was called an Arad. Hakanani Melech Arad, that fought Bnei Yisrael when Aaron died, was a Molek, according to Rashi. It was a Molek dressed up as somebody different, it's dressed up as the Kananim. It's a greater amount of Tumah. You take Balak and Bilam, and you put them together, and you have all of them together, not just the lave of Bilam and Balak, but all of them together, then all of a sudden you come out with a Tumah that is so powerful, it is impossible to get around. Absolutely impossible to get around. So how do you do it? How do you stop this Klipa? You know what you have to do? You have to separate Balak from Bilam. Separate them from one another. Moshe was brilliant. 12,000 people went to war, which gave him 120 Sarei Meos, and 12 Sarei Alafim. 120 plus 12 is 132. These Sarim did not go out to war. Only 12,000 people went out to war. What was the job of the 132 people? The job of those 132 people was to daven. Sit there and daven, says the Chasam Sofer. Sit there and be mevatel the klipa of Balak. Destroy the tumah that Balak's bringing into Klal Yisrael. Sit and learn Torah. And if you're mevatel even for a second, then we're not going to be able to destroy them. There's nothing we can do. It wasn't a war just to kill people. It wasn't a war to take revenge because the Midianim had fought up against us. It was a war of Tumah. Kedusha versus Tumah. And they sat down, these 132 people, and they started learning. But they must have been mevatel from their Torah. Because the men didn't kill the right woman. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get angry at the 12,000 men. 12,000 men only did what a Kadosh Baruch Hu could allow them to do. He didn't get mad at Pinchas, who led the war. He got mad at the 132 people whose job it was to knock down Balak. And he said to those 132 people, what did you do? You must have been mevatel your Torah. You're the greatest people we have in Klal Yisrael. What were you thinking? For that, that was the woman, Limsor Ma'al Ba'ashem. There was still Ma'al left. There was still a little bit of the Amal of Amalek that was left now within Arad. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. Because there's nothing he can do now. The Amal is going to be left in Klal Yisrael. There's still that little bit of Chet that we can't get rid of until we have that Amelus and knock it all out. It's a crazy fort from the Chasam Sofer. But it tells you how many things are going on behind the scenes. It tells you how many things are going on backward and forward and everything that's going around. It's not just a war. It's not the way. Everybody always asks this. What do we have to kill the woman for? What do we have to kill the children for? What do we have to do this? What do we have to do that? You're right. It's crazy that we, in theory, sound like the Arabs of today. That there's a mitzvah to kill every Jew. Mitzvah to kill every man, woman, and child. It sounds crazy that we went up to Midian and Moshe Rabbeinu was upset that they didn't kill innocent women. Upset that they didn't kill them. What's pshat? It's that these are not normal women and children. These are women and children infused with the powers of Tumah. This is not just a Malik. This is more than a Malik. It's a Rud. That is a powerful Tumah that nobody can go up against. And there's nothing, absolutely nothing, that the people can do. Why they were born that way? Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu make them that way for them just to be killed by the Jews? I have no idea. That doesn't matter. That really doesn't matter. But there's a secret behind everything here. There's a reason why it's all there. We may never be privy to the full secrets of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to kill a Malik and destroy every man, woman, and child. Why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Midian gone off the face of the earth. Why we're allowed to keep those women that did not sleep with men. Why are we allowed to keep those women? Those women who are under the age of 3, who are allowed to be captives. Why are those women different? We may never be privy to that information. But it doesn't matter. There's a secret. There's a private idea that's going on behind the Torah. That this doesn't show you just a glimpse of it? Just a glimpse of what's going on behind the scenes? Of Arud and Amalek and everything else behind that? I don't know what can. I don't know how much further you can go. I guess you can learn Kabbalah and then, you know, rock this. I guess that possibly, and then create a cow and do whatever you want. That could possibly happen. But until that point, this is the remnants of the Torah. You can't get much deeper than this. These are parts of the ideas of what you want to go. A question for everybody. I want you to think about this. I'm going to end off with this. Rav Wolfson says, he points out in Parshas Maaseh, in Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Gimel and Pasuk Yud Beis, it goes through the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Does anybody know what the first border of Eretz Yisrael is? How we start off? Eretz Yisrael starts at, what would you think? If you had a guess, some part of Eretz Yisrael, where would you think it would start off with? What? Yerushalayim. Right, the middle, somewhere around, like maybe, so, you know what it starts off with? Yam HaMelech. And you know how it ends off? It goes all the way around until you get to Yam HaMelech. The first city, first place mentioned, we're mentioning the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and the last place mentioned, we're mentioning the borders of Eretz Yisrael, is Yam HaMelech. Why? Why in the world is that the end all and the beginning? For all of Klal Yisrael, for all of our borders, it's the Yam HaMelech. Why there? That's Sodom. It's like the last place that you want it to be. The last place. And do you find it a little strange that the only time that it uses, that it describes what Sodom looked like, before we have the Yam HaMelech, which is today obviously desolate in the desert and disgusting, it says, V'inei kulo miksha kegan Hashem. It was entirely like a land full of water. Like a garden of God. It's not just Stam that Stom is called that. Rav Wolfson speaks about this a little bit, but it's just a thought, something that you can look into. What does it mean that we're starting with Yam HaMelech, ending with Yam HaMelech, and then all of a sudden, it's a place that's called Kegan Hashem, like the garden of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Something to think about. It's a summary. Purpose in the Dharam. It helps us in the throes of sin when we're all the way in the throes of sin. Number two, all extra Yisurim that you put upon yourself should all be out of love. Otherwise, you're going to mess yourself up. Number three, the power of our Devo. You give the story of Shimon Perez, of the Aguna, of Rechayim Shmulevitz, and the anger box. Fighting Amal of Sam with the Amal of Torah. And being able to fight a Malik and a Rud. That brings us down to the Yam HaMelech, which is something to just think about. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.
Very good. Very good. What is that?
I don't know.
That's a good call. Oh, good. Very well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Yeah, anybody wants to have a Marav? There could be a Marav downstairs right now.
Here, you're going to just.
I'm going to go back. Right now.
You're not staying for Shabbos.
For Shabbos, I'll be here. I'll be around. I'll be around. So what time would I? What time would I have? What time would I have to call? -9. It's noon right now?
I might have lots of answers.
Good. I want an answer. I want to hear an answer. Okay, so I can call tonight. I can call tonight. It shouldn't be a problem, right? I have it under red caps. Okay, so Lena, there, I'll try to call tonight. No, you just did it for me. I should be fine. Y'all?
So, let's say I had an NDA.
No, not really. Yo, I'll see you soon. It's a little crazy. I can't believe it. I know. Yeah, I know you said you didn't want it. Come on. I just wanted you to go down. I'm honest. I would have gone. With Bob. But now we know why. Now we know why.
That's my
email
client also.
That was a joke. Now I need to
know. You get the four. So you get it twice.
Oh, yeah. He's got it, guys. Oh, my God. We can stop this, Aaron.
What?
Now, he's going to be on his phone all day long.
I'm a technologist.
So wait a second. Can somebody download Pac-Man onto my phone?
Who's this guy?
No. For free. No. It's the only game that I really, really want, and I can't do it. Is it Vizzotella?
Yeah.
And I promise I'll only do it at night before I'm falling asleep.
No,
that's
bad. Your phone?
Ours is between all prayers.
So yeah, but I can't get
out. Realize that by the time
we were in that zone.
Wait, hold on.
It's much better. Oh, this is awesome. It comes with your own skipping system. All you have to do. Oh, wow. I didn't even know that.
Did you pay for that?
Yeah, hold on.
$3.99.
There. You can do?
$3.99.
Free. Yeah, hold on. You can start off.
Let me go. Hashem?
No, all you have to do is just start off like this. Go, Burak, and I'll give us all my job. That was quick. Kashima Shotain. That worked out really well.
I have that one also.
Oh, you know what the new iPhone has? It's unbelievable. The new iPhone has an app on it.